The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Our weekly session involves your questions. You send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we answer the questions. Layla Mutens, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, she's a registered dietitian. She also possesses a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and she and I work together on a daily basis at the Hoffman Center, and she has her own podcast, which normally posts on Fridays. What's it called, Layla?
Layla Weighs In.
Layla Weighs In. That's very clever, Layla. Okay. So, and what have you weighed in on lately?
I weighed in lately, and they'll get it in another week or so. I've answered some questions about certain supplements. I've gotten into a great deal of depth about hypoglycemia, which was another question from a listener. Can you just talk about hypoglycemia? So I did.
Okay, great. All kinds of useful information. And today we're here to answer your questions. So without further ado, we've got lots of them.
Yes.
And so let's tackle some questions.
Okay, we've got a question, an email from Nick. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a 68-year-old male. Last winter, I fell on the ice and broke my ankle. Over several months, I underwent two surgeries. I received numerous x-rays and CT scans. Are there any nutritional, lifestyle, or supplemental therapies I can use to help undo the harmful effects of all the radiation I received?
Right. So it is clear that radiation over a lifetime of exposure has been documented to increase the risk of cancer by as much as 10% for the average American who receives numerous x-rays. However, it is also important where you get the x-rays. So if you're getting a lot of abdominal CAT scans or head CTs, it is more likely that you could have a body burden of oxidative stress from the free radicals that are generated by x-rays. X-rays basically set off free radicals in the body and can trigger mutations in the cells. It is a little less likely that when it occurs peripherally, in other words, like if it's a hand or a foot, that it's going to affect you systemically.
That's
number one. Number two, a lot of people think, well, how do I get that radiation out of my body? It's not like you're going to glow. It's transient. You're not radioactive after you get an x-ray. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, purging it, taking something to get it out. It's also not a situation like where if there's a reactor leak and you may want to take iodine, which actually protects your thyroid from harm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you ingest or drink some radioactive iodine, it goes to the thyroid and can damage the thyroid, so you take iodine to displace that, protecting your thyroid.
Yeah.
Theoretically, one could mitigate the effects by taking any of the antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little like shutting the barn door after the horse gets out, in my opinion, if you're saying you had all these x-rays and now you're worried about what to do for protection.
So the time to take it is probably before the x-rays and after the x-rays, around the time of the x-rays.
And the other thing, I too had a situation where I had to have a lot of x-rays because I broke my hip a few years back. And so what I opted for is I opted for the minimal amount of radiation exposure possible. So in lieu of getting CAT scans, which are far more radiation than are just a regular x-ray. I just got regular x-rays.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at a certain point, they wanted to do more x-rays to make sure that everything healed. But I was feeling fine. And I said, I know that you'd like to A, for medical purposes, confirm that everything's okay.
Yeah.
And B, maybe you want to have a nice slideshow because it was a pretty good case and you want to illustrate how this guy who was all banged up is now doing fine and was a very successful outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry I'm messing up your slideshow, but I don't want that, you know, fifth and sixth x-ray a year or a year and a half later. I don't need to do that. And so I just walked away. No, I'm not going to do it. Is it okay? You know, you're free.
You feel good. That,
you're free.
That should be,
you know, so, I mean,
yeah.
If there was a problem, I would have delved further. So I think people have to really sometimes question, is there really a need for this? Is there another way to do this? Of course, MRIs, no radiation, more expensive, time-consuming, but prevent radiation exposure.
I get this question a lot from some people about dental x-rays. Is it necessary that they get dental x-rays every time they go for a cleaning?
No, it really isn't. And you know,
It isn't, right?
It's a moneymaker, really, because often you have what seem to be free dental visits.
Mm-hmm.
You're covered. But what they do is they got to do something, because if they just looked at your teeth, it wouldn't be very billable.
Right.
So getting x-rays is billable, and they've got the x-ray machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, they might discover something. But you kind of want to minimize all the extra x-rays because there are some signs that certain types of cancer may be increased by dental x-rays. There was one study, I think, on parotid gland tumors, which is right where they – there's a gland that's right in the side of your face that it's a repository for saliva. And that is a type of tumor that may be associated with more dental x-rays.
Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, a friend of mine who has lymphoma, her hematologist, oncologist, told her, you're not to have dental x-rays more than once every 2 years. It should never be more frequent than that, and it should be more for diagnostic than for screening.
Great. Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
You know, you know, some dentists may take umbrage at what I'm saying, but because they do, you know, you can get early detection of cavities and dental problems. But on the other hand,
pockets.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's not warranted to do some of the mini x-rays.
Yeah. Nick, thank you for your question. Hope you feel better. Okay, I've got a question from Bonnie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Your show is the best, my constant exercise companion. I love when people write in that they're exercising and that's their opportunity to listen.
That's a dual benefit.
Beautiful.
That's like you're really doing something healthy for yourself.
Quick question about super beets. I try to do as many vegetables a day as I can, sometimes 6 servings, sometimes more if I can. Can I include super beets as a serving, or is that cheating? Just curious.
Well, I'm not too worried about this person because in the spirit of her question, she wants to up her servings. It would be another story if you said, look, I hate vegetables and I don't eat fruit. Can I take super beets in lieu of that?
Yeah.
And, you know, we could carry this to great extremes. We could say, well, if you don't have to eat any fruits or vegetables, all you need to do is take vitamin C instead of eating, citrus fruit, and take lycopene instead of eating tomatoes, and taking Dimfro or sulforaphane glucosinolate instead of taking
broccoli,
and, you know, on and on it goes, quercetin instead of eating apples, and pretty soon you just have a handful of pills like, what we used to think would be astronaut food. You know, they said they're going to invent just a pill that you can take instead of eating. Won't that be convenient? I'll think all the time we waste eating. We'll just take a pill and it'll have everything we need to survive. And that never panned out, did it?
No. And so much for the joys of gastronomy.
I think the first try on that was Tang.
I grew up with Tang.
That was from the NASA space program. That was like one of the offshoots of the space program.
I thought it was so cool that I could be drinking what the astronauts drank. That I really did as a kid.
Right.
That and spinach because of Popeye. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, Bonnie, you're a good vegetable eater.
Yeah.
She's a good vegetable eater. And, you know, take your super beets. You don't have to count it as a serving. You're a good vegetable eater, so carry on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure there's a clear-cut answer to that question.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right. We have a question from Forrest. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a doctor very recently on a PBS special, was it Dr. Perlmutter, he's asking, said studies prove that Alzheimer's was much more likely with these bad fats. He's talking about saturated animal fats. Are they the bad fats?
It probably wouldn't be Perlmutter, because I think Perlmutter is a fan of saturated fats in preference to polyunsaturated vegetable oils.
Yes.
And in preference to grains, because he's the author of The Grain Brain.
Mm-hmm. I believe there was another doctor, I don't remember his name, who authored a book which was leaning more towards low fat for Alzheimer's.
That must be very confusing for PBS viewers.
Yeah.
They do one special that emphasizes one thing.
I know.
And then,
I don't know that Dr. Perlmutter was on PBS, though.
He may have been. I don't even recall.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's also, you know, I think Daniel Amen has done specials on PBS.
Yeah.
And also there's some doctors who do regional things. They get it put on in a local city, but it's not broadcast all through the PBS network.
Right, right.
You know, PBS is good, but I think, you know, some of those things are a little bit pay to play. You know, I've been offered an opportunity. They say, well, if you have X amount of dollars, you can do a PBS special.
Mm-hmm.
We invite you to do a PBS special because they're looking for content. It's not like... Look, they don't want somebody who's a complete moron, you know, giving horrible information, but some of it's based on, hey, you want to do it and you can lay it out, you can get a PBS special.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the information always authoritative or correct? Well, who knows? When it comes to diet, there's a lot of controversy. So,
That's true.
You'll get two experts with different opinions.
That's true. That's true. I've heard some opposing views. Anyway, Forrest, the bad fats, the fats to really be very careful with or not have at all, are the factory-made trans fats, the trans fatty acids. Saturated fats are not inherently bad.
Yeah, but I think you realize this, is that tons of the most wholesome safflower oil...
Oh, that's true,
and,
yes.
You know, the omega-6 oils, we get into an imbalance where... Even if it's clean, organic, blah, 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 high oleic canola oil.
That's true.
You know, there's a lot
He was talking the realm of saturated.
Yeah.
But no, the vegetable oils, absolutely. Those are very, very, very pro-inflammatory, the omega-6s. But if your saturated fats are coming from organic grass-fed sources, you should be fine with that.
Yeah, there's actually, and there are different saturated fats. There are actually some that are, less inflammatory than others.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think stearic acid is shown to have a neutral effect on cholesterol. Stearic acid is found in chocolate. It's found in meat.
And palmetto oleic acid, which is actually a partially trans fat. It's a natural trans fat.
A natural trans fat. We have to make another distinction here. There's the factory-made trans fats.
Right.
And there are the ruminant trans fats, the naturally
CLA
occurring.
Conjugated linoleic acid is also a trans fat, which is actually a healthier trans fat.
Right, because it's naturally occurring.
Right.
So these are important. But no, don't be afraid of saturated fat then in general for Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a condition of glucose intolerance in the brain. It's called type 3 diabetes. It's insulin resistance in the brain. You have to be careful of the carbohydrates, and that's why the addition of coconut oil in a diet, in a ketogenic, low-carb type diet...
Helps people think better.
...is beneficial, because they can operate on ketones better than on blood sugar, and that's a good thing. And the addition of coconut oil puts you into ketosis right away because the type of saturated fats in coconut oil, the medium-chain triglycerides, demand that they be metabolized immediately.
Right.
So it puts you literally in ketosis, even though you just had a bowl of cereal.
Apropos of that... I'll share that this month I'm experimenting with something called the Whole 30 diet. And I've actually blogged about it in our newsletter. You can find an article I wrote about this at drhoffman.com. This is based on my first week or so experience with the Whole 30 diet. But it's an interesting diet because it's not paleo in the sense that it does allow you some nightshades. It puts no restrictions on potatoes or on tomatoes. Green peppers, so on. However, you cannot have any grains, just like a paleo, not even rice, not even quinoa.
No grains
no
at all.
No buckwheat, no whole grains, nothing.
Yeah.
So it's not just no flour products and no gluten, it's no grains. Also, no legumes, which...
No beans, no peas.
Would have been easy for me, but I've got a big peanut butter Jones.
Uh-huh.
I love my
so
peanut
butter.
So many
people do.
I know. I'm like, and so I can't have any peanut butter.
I keep telling people about macadamia nut butter. It's so much tastier.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's not the same, though. And you know, maybe I'm just have like an addiction.
Okay.
I'm addicted to it, you know, because it's pretty addictive. And then no chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
No, because chocolate's got sugar in it. So it's zero tolerance of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have fruit. So with lunch today, I had some mixed fruit for dessert.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an ultra-low-carb diet unless you want to lose a lot of weight, in which case it's a great way to lose weight. I'm not trying to lose weight. I just want to see if I feel mental clarity, focus,
all the things,
alertness. No alcohol, zero, which is another thing I miss.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was a big drinker, but, you know, a drink now and then is nice, especially on New Year's Eve. That was kind of weird. And the other thing is, apropos of these oils, they're even discouraging your use of polyunsaturated oils.
Yeah.
So I dress my salad with a little bit of walnut oil, a little bit of olive oil. They prefer, for cooking, ghee.
Ghee is great.
They
no
don't
milk
want the
solids.
Dairy solids in it. So there's no dairy. There's no cheese. There's no... None of that.
Yeah.
Because that's not paleo. And I'm having a lot of eggs and fish, chicken, meat, lots
vegetables.
Of vegetables.
Nuts.
And for carbs, I'm entitled to have some butternut squash or a sweet potato or regular potatoes.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's
but
no
my,
such thing...
I find
thing...
My craving for starch, for carbs, is reduced.
There you go.
For sure.
Because eating it begets more craving of it.
Yeah.
It just does.
Yeah.
You know.
So I'm doing pretty good on it. I can't tell you that, you know, I'm having like a total revolution in my health. I do feel alert and pretty energetic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were already a good eater. You're already a healthy eater.
Yeah.
So you don't have it far to go.
Right. It wasn't like a real revolution. And I didn't go through conniptions like they say some people do.
Yes.
So if eating like a horrendous diet and you do this, it's like hitting a brick wall.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's really
some
hard.
People really feel the withdrawal. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And the withdrawal has not been too profound for me. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm pretty satisfied with the food I'm eating.
Terrific.
Yep.
Terrific.
So we'll carry on, give you a report at the end of it, and I'll write another article summarizing my impressions of it.
Looking forward to that.
Yep.
Okay. Speaking of diets, got a note, an email from Diane. I've read you should not mix grains and fruit like oatmeal and apples or banana bread, but so often on healthy eating sites, their recipes combine them together. Does it matter or not? It's so confusing for those of us trying to eat the best way for health. And many recipes use almond flour. There's something like 90 nuts in a cup, and they're high in oxalates. How healthy is almond flour or nut butter for a person even without the oxalate problem?
Well, that's two questions.
Yeah.
So we're going to charge extra on this one. So, first of all, as to this food combining notion, it depends.
Yeah.
It really depends because some people tolerate that combination just fine.
Mm-hmm. And that's their breakfast of champions.
Right.
Possibly a bowl of steel-cut oatmeal and a little banana or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
However, for a lot of people, that is a fermentive mess.
Yes.
Because if you take a starch and you mix it with sugar and the bacteria or the yeast in your gastrointestinal tract ferment it, and then things go... You know, you just get this, you get a real gas and bloating formation. You become you develop auto-brewery syndrome.
Yeah.
And which actually I described in a recent radio program is there have been several documented cases of this. And they're astonished when they hear about this. But we know about this from daily practice, people who feel logy and tired. And then when they get on a lower carb diet and they go on a candida diet, they have enhanced mental clarity. They're no longer bloated, distended, and brain fogged.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it depends. It kind of depends on how you're doing.
It does. It does depend on. If you do have yeast, this is not a great breakfast for you because
one
of the byproducts of all that candida is alcohol. And for people who are yeasty, who are foggy, you might almost call them a little bit drunk or something.
But interestingly, it's not even just alcohol sometimes it's measurable on the breath of these people, even when they don't imbibe alcohol.
Yeah.
So the answer for them is antifungal medication, very low-carb diet. But also, there are byproducts of this fermentation that are very toxic, like aldehydes, that really make you feel ill and hungover, almost like you've had too much poor quality liquor.
Yeah.
You know, not just high-quality distilled vodka, because that's pretty much pure alcohol, but just all these, you know, these toxic byproducts of fermentation.
Congeners,
I think they're called.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so that's number one. Number two, for the bonus question.
Yeah, the almond flour.
This is a whole big question as to this oxalate thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is highly debated. It's coming into vogue because...
Of smoothies.
Right, because so many people are doing smoothies and so many people are doing
bags and bags of spinach.
And, you know, kale this and kale that. And there's a lot of oxalates in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so among the problems associated with oxalates are not just stones.
Kidney stones.
But also, in some cases, fibromyalgia.
Yes.
In some cases, vulvodynia.
Yes.
A low oxalate diet is used for vulvar pain.
Also, interstitial cystitis.
Interstitial cystitis.
Yeah.
Also, some patients have arthritis associated with this. It is thought. Now, there is a lab that measures that as part of an organic acid test. It's called the Great Plains Lab. You can get your oxalates measured. I guess there are other labs that do that. You can find out how much you're excreting if you're over-excreting oxalates. The question is, does it matter? You know, if you're over-excreting oxalates, could it mean that you're just probably, you know, properly imbibing a lot of foods that are rich in oxalates and it's coming out?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that oxalates are your problem.
Right. Because a healthy gut or microbiome will ensure that you're able to excrete the oxalates properly.
That's exactly right. Because patients who have short gut syndrome or have had operations, they have more stones. Because having a longer normal gut ensures that you conjugate the oxalate in the gut and it comes out in the stool.
Yeah.
But if you don't have proper digestion, proper microbiome, or if you have a short gut syndrome, some patients with ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, then your oxalate gets reabsorbed and it has to be excreted via the kidneys, where it can cause kidney stones.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may stay high, the blood levels may be high.
Yeah. Interesting.
So,
I
think this is going to be one of these controversial areas. Now, I've read pro and con on this. This is one of these fiery debates in the natural community. Is this a real phenomenon, or people, you know, just shortchanging themselves because juices are healthful and there's not a big downside? I've actually read a pretty cogent rebuttal to the notion that oxalates are bad for you.
I did too.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I think in Townsend
Letter. Yeah.
Diane, thank you for your question. Coming back to her original question about the food combining, again, it depends, as you were saying. You could become a very gassy, bloaty mess because of something like that, because the two food groups which are the most fermentable in the gut are your grains and your fruit. So if you have a problem or if you have issues with irritable bowel syndrome or things of that nature or even candida, maybe not the best thing for you.
It's not very FODMAPs.
It's not very FODMAPs,
because the, fructans are the grains.
Yes.
That stands for the F. And then oligosaccharides would be... And disaccharides, O and D, are in the fruits.
Or in the fruits, right.
And MAPS is...
Monosaccharides.
Monosaccharides would be in the fruits, too.
Right. And polyols.
And polyols would be sometimes in the fruit. Like,
for example,
I think it's pears that have a lot of sorbitol.
Possibly.
Which...
There is some sorbitol in a lot of fruit,
Which can be gassy or promote diarrhea, intestinal trans. So, and polyols are things like xylitol, which also can cause problems. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not... On the FODMAPs diet, we eliminate those things, and then we can add them back and see which is a problem.
Right.
You know, whether it's an F or an O or a D or an MA or an A or P.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't have to eliminate all these things. It turns out you can find what is the provoking agent for your IBS or bloating.
Yep. Yep.
So there
you
go.
Thank you, Diane.
That's our best shot at that question. And this is a point at which to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. And we will return in just a moment highlighting the following question. What's coming up, Leila?
My migraines came back when I stopped taking niacin. Is it a withdrawal?
Whoa. Niacin withdrawal is on cue for our next question. Coming up in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Leila, and I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.